Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome to the Raw Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by the Dadley Boys of What Culture, Michael Hamplin and Michael Sidgwick, here to review everything that happened on last night's episode of Monday Night Raw. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from, for daily wrestling podcasts where we not only review Raw and SmackDown, but also NXT, AEW, Dynamite, pay-per-views. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week, complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Hamplin and Sidgwick to review Monday Night Raw. And back to its old ways, Michael Hamplin. This was dreadful.
Yeah, so, you know, earlier on in the back, I was talking to Michael Cole today, and he said to me, the streak is over. We got two. They weren't good. They were barely passable, but they get a passing grade based on the curve that WWE has absolutely destroyed in the last 2 weeks. And those turned out to be the good old days. That, like, fortnight at the end of June turned out to be the good old days of Monday Night Raw, because this felt like the crushing normal wrapping its hands around my throat yet again on a Tuesday morning. What a piece of garbage.
Yeah, I saw hashtag it's over trending on Twitter today. Apparently that's not related to Monday Night Raw, but it certainly felt that way when the show finished. Sid, this was awful, wasn't it?
It is an unremittingly bleak day in Gateshead, England. It's freezing cold and the rain is torrential in July. We've destroyed the world. This isn't even related to the ongoing pandemic, which our government has decided to no sell. And, you know, there's actually positives and negatives to the approach that has been taken. And, you know, you just had this, it's got this maelstrom in my head constantly of how screwed everything is and will anything get better. And all you want, realistically, is to escape it. WWE's mission statement is we're going to put smiles on people's faces. Well, I don't have a smile on my face. I really don't. Terrible show. Terrible finishes. Everyone looks like an idiot. And one of the few earnestly good things this show has going for it was continued along in the most drab of ways. That's my take. Yeah. Let's get into the show.
I was just working this out, and I think I counted five conclusions to a match that were either a roll-up, a count out, or a DQ. And that's not even including the, oh, wait a second, you're not legal finish that we're going to get to in due course. We genuinely had to have a pre-show meeting to decide what we were skipping, because I was worried that every match was going to get a skip. It's like, we've got to mention some things here. But let's start at the beginning of Monday Night Raw. It opened with that special Money in the Bank edition of Miz TV. Miz opened the show, talked about being a two-time Money in the Bank winner, two-time person who's cashed it in to win the title, of course. And he said his Money in the Bank expertise meant that his Mr. Money in the Bank next would be his best friend, John Morrison. I don't know why he pops me so much with his America's Moist Wanted and the Flood Stud, but it tickles me every time. He said he's best equipped to win the ladder match. Miz introduces his next guest, who just so happens he cashed in on with the Money in the Bank briefcase to win the WWE title. It was Drew McIntyre. McIntyre came out and talked about the fact that not only had he just, you know, battered a load of other people, he also had a Bobby Lashley attack him post-elimination chamber. That was the reason why Miz won the title. And McIntyre, ever since then, has been fighting to win it back. Not very well. But he's suddenly become a sodding historian, apparently. This time he's talking about Money in the Bank and Texas and the Alamo and David. Honestly, lads, I do apologise. I realise this is my job, but I've given up making notes on the crap, horrible histories that Drew McIntyre presents. So something about the Alamo. Something about the Alamo, something about Davy Crockett and some family relation or some bollocks. And he said he was going to shove Morrison's head up Miz's ass. And just like Crockett, he would rather die in Texas than give up the briefcase. Out comes Ricochet. Miz says that Ricochet's, you know, risked everybody's careers with that mad diving crossbody spot the previous week. And he said, well, that just shows I'm willing to do whatever it takes to win the briefcase. Riddle then interrupts John Morrison, gets in there, gets on top of the ladder. And ironically, this is exactly what me and Sid were talking about in the preview yesterday. Climbs to the top of a ladder. Miz says, what on earth are you doing? And Riddle says, oh, isn't that what we're supposed to do? Talks about saying, oh, man, I'm so high. And rambles on again. Stoner bollocks. Miz stops him and just goes, oh, my God, why hasn't Randy Orton kicked you in the skull yet? Oh, yeah, this was the start of a show-long angle where I think Riddle thinks Randy Orton's dead because he kept kissing his hand and pointing to the sky, which again,
What's he pointing there for?
Yeah. I'll take my slight enjoyment of this show where I possibly can. Anyway, AJ Styles and Big George interrupt. Styles are still moaning about Orton dropping out and wanting a singles match one-on-one between him and Drew McIntyre. He says, this is all Riddle's fault. He's the one who got pinned last week after all. Riddle just wants a high five from Omos, but Omos pulls him off the top of the ladder and he goes down on that injured ankle of his after he kicked the steel steps last week. Styles kicks him in the bad leg, as kicks the leg out of his leg as well. Omos and Styles leave the ring. McIntyre squares up to them. Omos goes to get back in the ring, but now McIntyre clotheslines him out. Morrison takes out Ricochet, but Ricochet drop kicks him from the ring and Miz is left alone in the ring, in his wheelchair, to which Ricochet snatches up the dripstick and breaks it in two. I dread to... Who wants to take this one to start the show with? You don't look interested, either of you.
My prevailing memory of this segment, which, honestly, the memories of which evaporated even as you were running it down, just such trivial banter rubbish, was I didn't think it was possible, but I think Ricochet is even more of a geek. With his R to the I to the C to the O to the C. Oh my God. I wanted to jump out of my window and curse the fact that I only broke my wrist because I was watching it downstairs. That's what I wanted to do. That is what I wanted to do when I was watching this G to the E to the E to the K to the C to the U to the N to the T.
This is just so much of nothing. Like, how was there so much of nothing happening here? This is like reminiscent of the bit in The Office where Tim's been bought a giant inflatable cock for his birthday and they're all doing the whose line is it anyway props round. And then Gareth takes it and David Brent's character gets annoyed because, like, you can't take it unless you've got an idea. Like, one of these wrestlers, but the giant inflatable cock is a microphone. Like, they take it and they've got nothing to say. They've got nothing to contribute with this thing in this little bit of improv that we've all very carefully orchestrated. And just nothing goes on. And yet so much of it just has to happen. Like, the Ricochet stuff was just cringeworthy. Riddle, it's just, like, crap. Last things on the, like, cutting room floor. Jokes about being high because he's climbed a ladder. Nonsense. Like, the dripstick is what it... Like, I kind of with you, I think, Wilborn, like, Morrison sort of forces this stuff over. And I kind of guiltily laugh occasionally at John Morrison. That's about as, like, far as I can go with it. And nothing feels any further on. We've got, like, a show established tonight, but ultimately these are all the dweebs that are supposed to be fighting for the biggest and best opportunity in WWE. That's what this is ultimately there to promote. And it's just like, hey, that match that means more than any other match this year, they're all complete losers and they're in it. So that's, like, less than ideal. Aye, just... Oh, and Drew McIntyre as well. Is this some like hashtag LTST? Is he struggling to cope with the fact that he's a loser now? Is that what like History Lesson Drew is all about? That he's, are they trying to tell the story of him being unfocused? And is that coming out in the form of him telling it like a history lesson once a week? And then somebody, a Brock, or, you know, a guy that's actually known how to stay over all these years, just there like to beat some sense into him and to remind him to get back to what he was really good at for about a year. Is that why this keeps happening every week? Because it feels too pointed now. He's doing this every week.
I think he's just become a caricature, as virtually everyone in this company does.
Yeah, you say once a week, twice a week. He did it twice on this show. Yeah. But I don't. I think they think it's like, here's the abridged version, and they'll do some sort of online content of, you know, Drew McIntyre tells the story of this, but it's all wrong because it's some bollocks. I don't know or care. Like you say, I didn't make notes on that, and I genuinely think that I think my brain choked. You know, when you're like, sometimes they say like your brain sees stuff that's so horrific it decides to just wipe it. Like, I forgot to write notes on that because I went, no, I don't want to remember that ever again.
There's a line in Arrested Development from the late, great Lucille Bluth, who no-sells something that, what's he called? The psychiatrist, David Cross's character.
Tobias.
Yeah, Tobias is talking about the concept of denial. When a thought enters your head that is so harrowing to your identity that the mind literally rejects it. and that's what this art of the eye to the seat of the O. Like, he stumbled over the E. It's like, you're meant to be a hip hop and guy who's full of cool. And he's like, E-E-E-T.
Love it. Like, Will Vaughn didn't include it in his notes. And it's like, that's the one thing they always said about Ricochet on the Indies. He was forgettable.
Yeah, Ricochet there doing the not Ali A, not Ali B, not Ali C, not Ali D, not Ali E, not Ali F, but Ali G. Yeah! But anyway, right, he's not good on the mic, but he's excellent in the ring. And, you know, did that spectacular spot last week. So it's time now to have the match get a definitive finish and give him that win that, you know, catapults him into... Oh, no, he lost to John Morrison by a count out. Look, they did some mad stuff in here again. This Ricochet trying to jump off Miz's wheelchair, but this time Morrison obviously catches him, powerbombs him into the barricade, and Morrison hit a standing Spanish fly, and Ricochet nailed Morrison with a tilt whirl DDT. But then, of course, the dripstick, the great equalizer, I think they call it, was utilized by Miz on the outside, cradled for a near fall. Hey, look, a roll up that didn't result in a victory. That's a collector's item on this show. So Morrison's on the apron trying to get back in. Ricochet's in the ring and he does some sort of mad dive, spear, flip. I've no idea what it was. You have to see it to believe it. It was incredibly spectacular, but they both spill to the outside. But Morrison makes it back in the ring and Ricochet doesn't because Miz slightly blocks his path with a wheelchair. So John Morrison defeats Ricochet via countout, Michael Hamflet.
Rubbish finish, obviously. Just rubbish. The guy that can move anywhere and everywhere can't get past like the Miz, who's just ever so slightly wheeled in front of him. I've been trying recently with WWE to work out, like to try and spot the dark arts that separates an actual good match in the Thunderdome, like in this kind of anti-pro wrestling atmosphere, from just like empty calories content. And this was the latter for me. The spots just didn't, I didn't feel anything for the, like the gymnastic abilities of these two men, which is their USP really. So like this match failed for me as a viewer. There was also a couple of points where I felt like it was failing internally and they knew it. Again, like empty calorie content creation. There was a chin lock, which they deployed in order to show the dive from last week. So they have done a clip that has done well on Twitter, that's probably done well on YouTube, and they love it so much. They want it to exist in this week's match, but can't be arsed to think of a spot as entertaining or as big or as wild. So it's like, well, just slap on a hold so we can show them last week's one. That's the sort of stuff that's going to break the immersion as well. Maybe that's why the spots towards the end meant so little, because that's what we were getting in the middle. This was You know, it looked pretty, but it was a long way away from being good.
Remind me of the finish again.
The spear flippy dive thing, and then Morrison makes it back into the ring from a 10 count, and Ricochet's crawling in, but every time he tries to crawl close to the ring, Miz slightly wheels his wheelchair in front of him, so he has to go around him. And I thought, from what I've seen from Ricochet on his Twitter and stuff, that everyone keeps banging on about, look at the talent this guy got, and he is incredible. You know, he was going to do some sort of mad pop-up front flip over the wheelchair just to make it in for the 9 count. And then when it got to 9, I went, oh, he's not making it in for this.
I mean, you've established in one of the few cool moments in this series, and in fact, one of the generally most creative things that you see on these shows, that Ricochet is in fact so spectacular that he can vault over this and use it as a platform to perform these sort of like mind-blowing moves. And you just made him look like a tosser again. But the good news is that everything is so completely backwards that if you're a fan of Ricochet, you don't have to be sad because wins and losses don't matter. If anything, before and after one captures the Money in the Bank briefcase, you lose. You lose and lose and lose and lose and lose and lose and lose because you've got this shield, apparently. So he might win. He might not. Who can tell? The match itself was always going to represent a diminished return.
Mm-hmm.
It was, in fact, a diminished return, some cool spots notwithstanding. The finishes just render these meaningless, as does, in fact, the entire overarching narrative.
Next up, well, the boys told me on the SmackDown review yesterday that apparently, despite the fact that he's broken sad at the moment, Happy Corbin may well be a thing soon. And over on Monday Night Raw, we've got Midlife Crisis Mahal. He showed up on a red motorcycle for some reason. I don't know what how the other two make it there, but he's going by a bike, gets interviewed, says, oh, I bought this for myself after one of my many title defenses. Which one? Does it matter? They were all exactly the same match for about 4 months. He picked it up with his good old pal, Drew McIntyre, and he's tried to reach out to him recently, but took him 3 days to respond. And when he did, he said he was just too bloody busy to hang out. He thought he deserved better. He wanted to prove what he's always known, that he's better than Drew McIntyre. And there was going to be a match between the two of them later on in the night. We're getting the 3MB storyline, Sidgwick.
We've got it because that a match. And yes, it was a match to lead to a match. Look, there's nout on this bone. I've argued this point over and over again. Oh. What kind of long-term story is it? We were both in a faction that sucked. We both kind of got ripped and motivated and became in storyline in the case of one of these guys. A champion. Cool.
Yeah, it's been a while since we've reminded our audience how crap Drew McIntyre used to be.
Why would The Rock and Steve Austin have a match or a feud premised on the fact that, God, you sucked as Flex Cavana, you sucked more as a ringmaster? Why would you ever do that? Why would you ever do that? Why is it good? Why would you remind your audience that your larger-than-life superstars to which you aspire used to suck? It's always been a rubbish premise, and I'm glad that they haven't explored it.
It's going to be Omega versus Okada 3. But hey, remember when Okada sucked in TNA? Well, it's going to be like that, possibly.
Even the setup, man. Like, I use the Ultimate Warrior a lot because I think about like how possibly on earth children could get into this product now. And that's, you know, WWE need kids to invest so that they can build fans for life. And the Warrior would be a false equivalency here because he was a babyface, right? So I'll go to like the same year and he's maybe his biggest heel rival. Like, imagine like just Rick Rude like being livid because his text messages were left on read. That's what Jinder Mahal's angry about. Or is like ravishing Rick Rude, this ladies' man, like comes out and says, yeah, like my love letters went unanswered. I don't buy your gimmick at all now. Thanks very much for that, Rick Rude. Like, you've allowed me not to invest in that in the slightest. I cannot fathom how this is the stuff. Like, it's corny, cute comedy that WWE is just absolutely obsessed with, but it's like actively damaging. It's one of them times, like, some weeks you notice it and some weeks you don't, but everything is so broken that this flies. Nobody cares. I forget what the example Cedric used was.
Apollo Crews losing 2 weeks in a row.
That was it, yeah. There's something every week where, you know, once upon a time, people might have flagged that up. Isn't that a bit less than ideal? Now nobody cares. Nobody cares enough to flag it. There's a million things per episode.
We've got Nia Jax, Shayna Baszler and Reginald in the back. This story must continue for some reason. They're chatting. Reginald goes, bloody hell, Alexa Bliss is there. They look, she's not there. Baszler's sick of well, everything, understandably, on Monday Night Raw. They leave, and of course, spooky Alexa Bliss is actually there. I would expect she'd be knocking about because she was in a match in a second. Anyway, Naomi and Asuka are there chatting to Nikki Ash, Nikki Cross, Nikki almost a superhero. Naomi saying, oh, I really like what you've done. Your new look, your new name. Asuka says, I've always wanted to team with a superhero. And says, Nikki says, whoa, I'm no superhero. I'm not like Czech's Notes.
Black Widow.
That's a popular name at the moment. She's almost a superhero. Look, she talks about, she's clearly very passionate about all this, about giving hope, about believing in yourself, blah, blah, blah. Said she was ready to win Money in the Bank. And Naomi and Asuka go, whoa, pump the brakes a little bit. I'll be winning Money in the Bank, blah, blah, blah. Nikki goes, here are my music. I best get out there. She runs off. And then Alexa Bliss shows up and goes, I'm winning Money in the Bank as well. So I was scared out of my shoes with it. It's dreadful, pamphlet.
Oh, pitiful. Just pitiful. Like, all of these characters are like, Alexa Bliss is this... Like, we've been dreading Alexa Bliss winning Money in the Bank, right? Because it's this, like, spooky character, and they've pulled back on that.
It's and funny.
Now, like, so, like, she's now, like, a spooky dweeb. That's worse. That's even worse. Like, this complete dork, about 6 weeks ago... controlled people with her eyes. She, like, stopped Shayna Baszler being able to control her own legs and made them wacky. And now she's a dork.
Take like, form of Bruce Grubble our legs. Oh, my God.
The first time in 100 million years, WWE have actually adhered to a storyline about somebody being forced out or to retire or lose a lead, and it's over a doll. Like... they're actually honouring the stipulation, and it's with Lily. I don't know. Like, it's just, it's funny watching Alexa Bliss, like, sort of, like, how can she coexist? Well, I don't know, because she's not a real human being anymore, but somehow she's managing. Like, normal humans can't get along, but Alexa Bliss and Nikki Ash are suddenly best mates again.
Drivel. If you do the rundown of the match, I'll give you my thoughts on the match.
Yeah, do you know what I thought? As this match is starting. So it's an eight-woman tag match. Eva Marie, Doudrop, Nia Jax, Shayna Baszler.
Piper Enzo.
We all know Piper Niven and Enzo, you know, from the same road I think they grew up on. So we've got Nikki Cross, Alexa Bliss, Naomi and Asuka on the opposite side of the ring. And I thought, you know what? This Nikki Ash character isn't for me, but she's clearly really invested in it and it's there, it serves a purpose. She's almost a superhero. She's, you know, she's inspiring people through, you know, defying the odds and just getting things done. And then she's the one who eats the pitfall in this match, for Christ's sake. So basically, Doudrop is going to start the match, but Eva Marie immediately tags herself in, and then immediately when she gets into any threat, comes immediately out of the match. So later on, Naomi takes out Jax and Baszler with a dive. Asuka uses a hip attack, sort of drops Doudrop down on the outside, but then Nikki, huge dive to knock her down on the outside. Eva Marie turns around in the ring and Alexa Bliss just shouts at her, screams. She leaves the ring. And I think we went to break then. I certainly broke watching it. There was a bit where Asuka got squished between Doudrop and Nia Jax. In the middle of the ring. At one point, Bliss has, again, hypnotised... I can't believe I'm saying these things. What is my job? Alexa Bliss has hypnotised the sommelier, and Baszler notices this and suddenly realises the way to defeat Alexa Bliss, throw her into the barricade. Who knew? Who knew that was a way to defeat evil? Just chuck them about a bit, basically. Everyone comes in, everyone hits huge moves. Nikki Cross, again, rolls up Shayna Baszler, and I audibly went, oh, not again, like that. But she wasn't the legal woman. It was Nia Jax who immediately came in, Samoa drop to the superhero, almost a superhero, almost a superstar, almost over, who immediately gets pinned. And Eva Marie grabs the mic and announces she's won after the match and boils a lot of piss online by saying that she's now got more wins than Ronda Rousey, Becky Lynch, Lita, Trish, Mae Young, all of them combined in 2021. Good stuff on social media, that. But this match was bad, Hamflet.
Piss poor. Like, this was just a bad match. Ignoring all the problems with all the characters, this was a rubbish match. Like, poorly worked. Like, flubs, immersion breaking flubs, hesitation, bad timing, all that sort of stuff. Several wrestlers that are either not particularly comfortable in their own skin at the moment, and it's thus impacting their concentration, or were just completely on different pages and contributed to a match that went on like way too long. Way, way, way too long for the pathetic one-note story that we're ultimately trying to tell. What a complete mess. What an absolute mess WWE have made of women's wrestling for what's probably going on about 2 years, but has never been as clear as it has in 2021. With this and what's later to come, and the WrestleMania builds for the two women's title matches, etc. Like, probably WWE's worst creative crime this year, in a year absolutely brimful of them. Just a complete mess.
I was astonished that it didn't completely and utterly fall apart. Like, it threatened to. various moments, but given that it was an 8-man tag with Eva Marie in it, and Eva Marie expected to get in position for various spots in a convoluted match with a lot of, I guess, action in the most literal, strictest sense here, I was genuinely impressed that it didn't fall even further apart. Wacky stuff, rubbish, like immersion break and flubs, as Hamflet put it, rubbish. But like, this could have been Jackie Gator level bad, and it somehow wasn't. Still like a quarter of a star match, but didn't get in the minus. Well done, well done.
Alexa, show me damning with faint praise. Kevin Patrick goes into Lashley and MVP's backstage area, and they're getting pissed up at their main event, apparently partying with Lashley's ladies. And MVP's not happy that he's in there, basically. And Bobby Lashley said, "I decided to take a holiday after I beat both Drew McIntyre and Xavier Woods in those Hell in a Cell matches. But then I heard Kofi Kingston calling me Swift last week, so now I plan on hurting him tonight in the main event tag match." And then we got Mansoor versus Mustafa Ali. They showed that clip from the Battle Royal last week where Ali eliminated Mansoor. And then I think it was a .com exclusive where Mansoor confronted him. And Ali said, "I don't want you to end up like me," effectively. So they have a match, decent back and forth. It's Mustafa Ali. Could be doing, he's having great matches on main event, so I'm told. I won't be watching them, but anyway. Decent back and forth match, but then there's a point where Ali gets his foot trapped. It gets wrapped up in the ropes. Mansoor helps him out of it. So, of course, Mustafa Ali rolls him up. Surprise roll up. 1, 2, 3. And a big, I suppose, "I told you so" after the match, Sige.
I mean, he's a geek. He's a geek loser who is presented as this, as he, in his own words, has claimed, like, it's a 2K career mode. He's presented as a geek. And again, this might be interpreted by morons as a good storyline, capital G, capital S, because they can determine that it is, in fact, a storyline. It is a bad one that positions Mansoor as a total geek. And as a kernel of, you know what, he's came up from NXT as this sort of not particularly gilded, heralded championship caliber guy. I've long petitioned for WWE to do this, to bring a character that has one kind of weakness that they will eventually overcome, I might add, that allows them to lose and allows them to have a full dramatic character arc. So call me a hypocrite if you like. Don't really care anymore. I just generally don't care about the mutants anymore. I'm over it. But there's a way to tell a story without being a geek, just an idiot geek. So yes, they are telling a story over a series of weeks that they haven't dropped yet. We are talking literally bare minimum stuff. And in the context of pro wrestling, Mansoor is a loser, a geek loser. and it's hard to take him seriously as anything but a geek loser, even though they are telling a story about it.
They're going to make these a tag team, aren't they, Hamflet?
Well, I mean, they can't coexist at the moment, so it seems nailed on, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It probably has to go the way of a tag team because, you know, if this is the story, like Mustafa Ali saying, I told you so, basically, if you'd listen to me and like do as I say, then, you know, you'll realise that you're not going to get anywhere being good and being wholesome and all that sort of stuff. Could they not have, it's a fairly basic tale. Could they not have told it without delivering the match that this is supposed to lead up to? Like, could the point have not been weird with Mansoor versus anybody else? And then you actually build to Mansoor versus Ali instead of doing it in a match versus Ali. Because like in real story terms, it's like, oh yeah, you're right about that. And Ali's like, fall in his arm. Now I really made my point. End. Move on to the next thing. there's nowhere else for this to go. If it was Mansoor versus one of the Raw, like an Elias figure that like never normally can buy wins or whatever, and he's just lost his partner and he's going nowhere. But like Mansoor falls short against Elias because he tries to show that he's a good guy. And then, like, he bumps into Mustafa Ali backstage, or they have a moment where it's like, look, this is what I'm trying to get through to you. And even if that builds the match between the two, there's like this like little slither of tension between them. But we've had the match, we've had the payoff. So the tag team probably is the only route to go down. And that already looks like you're just doing it because you've got nothing proper for either of them. It's the Vince McMahon rule of tag teams because he doesn't care about that division. It's just like, oh, well, I'll just shove him in there for a bit.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Well, let's move on next to Drew McIntyre. Oh, actually, before we get the match, it was a backstage interview. This time, McIntyre said, oh, I've got a theory about that text message story, but I'm not going to tell you about it here. Oh, I can't wait. What a tease. I'll have to tune into Raw next week for that one. He gave Mahal credit, though, for wanting to fight him, unlike all the others in the locker room. Hint, hint. And then talked about his sword and Nessie and some bollocks. I don't know or care. It's awful, this sort of tongue-in-cheek. Well, we all know that I'm talking nonsense here, but it's killing 3 minutes. So there we go. He's going to win Money in the Bank, he said. And then we got Drew McIntyre versus Mahal. Mahal flanked by Shanky and Veer. Their gender's heavies. In the match itself. We need something to lighten the mood here. I thought a Sharky and George reference would be appreciated. So, Jinder Mahal gets
just die.
Like, this show's such a desperate mess out of World Ball Brain. Shanky, Sharky. With WWE, it's like that's 5 minutes on the review. That's that content ticked off.
Wilborn, do you know that we killed you off in podcast lore the other day? God damn it, I wish we had.
It's all right, lads. We've got past the mid-roll, lad. Whatever we say now, it doesn't really matter. So Jinder Mahal gets suplexed, rolls out the ring, and McIntyre's going after him when... I'm going to call him Veer and Shanky just to make it easier on everyone. Veer and Shanky get in his way. That allows Mahal to strike him in the throat and suplex him onto the announce table. Later on, McIntyre did a 3MB pose. I hope you're happy, internet. Blocks a Kalas, Future Shock DDT, sets up the Claymore, but in comes Veer and Shanky for the DQ. Mahal obviously uses the Nummies games, beat him up, hits him with the Colas, walks on the stage and steals his sodding sword. He says, "You took my opportunity away. I'm taking your family heirloom." He's stolen his sword, Michael Sidgwick.
What a drab load of old crap that went on too long this was. What an absolutely rubbish, rubbish professional wrestler Jinder Mahal is. He doesn't do a goddamn thing that's unique or gripping or convincing or believable. What an absolutely woefully generic professional wrestler he is. Look, here's the thing. It's the bare minimum. Do you think people hop on to friggin', I don't know, it's a TV show that's out at the minute. But it's a TV show that's just out. I don't really watch it. The Euros are on.
Oh, God, I'm so old. I watch nothing new.
EastEnders, not
EastEnders. It's probably the better analogy because it's a soap opera and it's produced weekly. But it's also rubbish. It doesn't have the resources that WWE has to be good. It doesn't have here's 20 minutes, use your creative artistic expression to do something good. It doesn't have that luxury like the scripting it. WWE are for some reason. But just imagine a TV show and people are on a podcast going on. Good thing about the storyline is... really makes sense. I won't do this. It's just the bare minimum. Look, they've introduced stakes. The problem is the stakes were a freaking prop 1 minute before this show was broadcast. So I can't care about it at all. The law of the sword is ridiculous 3 minute patter. I hate this. I hate this. And I was bored by it.
Becoming a bit of a fan of these meaningless stakes because you wrap one of the biggest angles of the year on SmackDown and now you move over to Raw where the winner gets a sword. that's the plot.
Forged from the tooth of the Loch Ness Monster.
Yeah.
That was claymored in the face. How is this company still operating?
Genuine
admiration. Good one on Wednesday nights.
Honestly, Cedric, genuine admiration for you finding new ways because I thought we exhausted every way of describing how boring Jinder Mahal was in 2017. Honestly, I didn't think there was another way to do it, and I was just really impressed how you still managed it. I still got something left. Just always keeping one in the chamber of how boring Jinder Mahal is.
Just love the fact that, like you say, across the board, it's like a child, I want to play with that. No, you can't do that anymore. No, I want Ricochet to steal Sheamus's hat and coat. No, you can't do that. Come on now. Okay. Oh, well, the winner's the king on SmackDown. Oh, okay, right. You've done that enough. Okay. Oh, he steals his sword. What else have they got? Someone's going to steal Naomi's, flashy jacket and sunglasses next or something. Although, to be fair, that would be great for Alexa Bliss's entrance. I'll tell you what. I think I might have actually improved that gimmick now.
Could you wear the glasses to protect you from being hypnotized?
Yeah.
He look at you and then you put the switch on and it just lights blinder or something.
What are we doing here? We've got a project on the go. I'm talking about Jinder Mahal for 10 minutes.
We're Shanky and Veer, the podcasters of the scene.
Shanky and Veer.
So, Kevin Patrick's earning some money tonight. This time he's chatting to The New Day. He says, "Oh, do you have to change your strategy? Because we just randomly decided it's no longer Xavier Woods versus Bobby last year. It's a tag team match in the week." And they said, no. They're very successful as a tag team, as you might remember. They were the number one best tag team ever, I think, on a WWE.com list or something they mentioned. Woods said he was back despite what MVP claimed and knew Kingston could beat Lashley at Money in the Bank. Kingston quoted Kevin Garnett, "Anything is possible," he said. He's excited to face Lashley in front of real people. And Kingston said, "Look, Lashley and MVP, you can take all the vacations you want. You can take your lady friends with you because, all the championship responsibilities, I'm going to take care of them after Money in the Bank." And before they left, Woods said it was going to be a breeze to beat Lashley and MVP.
It's too good for that company.
Yeah, without question. And then we got a lovely surprise. Didn't see this one coming. It was Mace and T-Bar facing off against Lucha House Party, and I thought, oh, okay, just going to, you know, remind us that Mason T-Bar are a dominant tag team, another squash for them. No, they lost. I mean, they murdered Lince Dorado for most of the match. Grand Metalik made the save. He took out Mace with a dive, and then Dorado gave T-Bar a Hurricane Rana into a cradle, into a pin, and they won Sidgwick.
Mace the noises they made in defeat were hilarious. Just what a pair of twats. What a pair of total cartoon losers. Like, what can I say about the match? 95-5. The 5% of the offense didn't register as believable at all. Like, taking Hurricane Rana bumps. And it's like, you're telling me, like, this is meant to be believable. You're the psychology company. Everybody else just needs to slow it down. Why don't you just suck my cock instead? Why don't you just do that instead? But yeah, funny. It's like, just when T-Bar tweeted, I thought we all didn't have any tag teams in the SpongeBob stylist font thing. I was like, well, are you one? This is a division, is it? Because it's a big crap.
Oh, God, just like this inception of SpongeBob for me. Just like a follow-up SpongeBob replies in. It doesn't. The weird, warped SpongeBob face going sideways. It doesn't. This weak Hurricane Run. I was just waiting for Mustafa Ali to appear back on the stage, stroking his chin, going, I told you should have did what I said. Suddenly the ousted leader of Retribution is the smart one.
Speaks volumes. I know we say this a lot. It speaks volumes that the one who came out of looking the best is someone who got legitimately KO'd from what I've seen on NXT last week.
Oh, Mercedes Martinez, yeah, it was horrible. Dropped right on her head. Horrible scene.
I'm glad you stepped in there, Sidgwick, because I was trying to work out what Slapjack did. On the show.
He's waiting in the wings. I've realised it's not going to be Sami Zayn. It's him that's going to take that opportunity from sad and broke Corbin and getting that money in the bank ladder match. Or they'll just do the Brock thing where he just shows up and whoever's at the top of the ladder is going to freeze. Has he got a paper plate on his face? Aha! And then he jumps up. Good news for anyone with a foot fetish next. A nice close-up of Matt Riddle's foot. He's still injured, obviously, from last weekend, what happened in the opener. He's checking on his foot. In comes very, very casual-looking Damian Priest. I like that shirt, though. Told him to maybe take it easy a little bit against AJ Styles. Don't want to, you know, screw up your chances for Money in the Bank, sorry. But Riddle said he wasn't afraid of heights, ladders, or AJ Styles. He wants to show everyone, including the late Randy Orton, he didn't say that, but he implied it by pointing up, that the three most dangerous letters in WWE were RK-Bro. Silly Riddle, that's five letters. Anything you want to say, Albert?
I don't know. Damian Priest, nice shirt, was it? Sergio Giorgini. Like that. I got nothing on this.
You can still find him.
I thought this was a really weak episode for the RK-Bro stuff off a very, very strong show-long thread last week. So why? We haven't done this one in a while, have we? But like, let's have some silent speculation about why Randy Orton hasn't appeared for 2 weeks of a television show. Now that that's passed, I hope that they just get back to it next week. And that's all it is, because it, like, for whatever reason that he's not around, last week was a bit of a home run in truth for WWE and how they kind of like kept that story moving. This week was less so.
We'll talk about the match and then I'll get your thoughts, Sidge. Riddle versus AJ Styles. Obviously, Styles is targeting Riddle's foot for the majority of this match. Riddle at one point does the Karate Kid pose and nails Styles because he thinks, well, he's just balancing on that leg. Gets a huge bap when he hits the crane kick. Riddle blocked a phenomenal forearm, hit a draping DDT, but then Styles dodged that floating bro. Riddle sells his injured ankle. Styles gets a near fall off the back of that. Then suddenly the Viking Raiders are there. They're stood by the barricade. That distracts Big Jord and Styles. And look, here we are again. Riddle, schoolboy Styles for the pinfall victory and poses with the Raiders after the match. And he says he loves Randy, points to the sky again. And I think we find out that in 2 weeks, I believe, when fans are there at Raw, we're going to get the tag titles defended, Viking Raiders versus the champs, AJ Styles and Omos. But what did you think of the match, Sig?
Very little. It's broadly good in places. You know they've got much better in them. They felt like a reversion to that rather than, right, do absolute bang out, zero stakes for probably too long, especially in the Thunderdome, because we haven't got a show. This is worse, obviously, because it wasn't as good a match, because they thought they had a show here with the various things going on, and they didn't, because it was bad. The Karate Kid stuff, it's like, does Cobra Kai excuse the fact that the film was in 1984? Does the fact that the music, does the fact that the movie just distills the beauty of Americana for me excuse the fact that it was in 1984 and not relevant? Like, the only thing I remember, what I'm driving at here, is the Karate Kid spot. Everything else is sort of like...
Have you seen Cobra Kai?
No. Should I?
Yeah, it's class.
Yeah.
It's class. Hamlet's got this weird relationship with Reagan's A's, where he concentrates too much on the awful politics and not the absolute wonderful nostalgia that it... gave to the world. He's not a big 80s America guy. I'm a massive 80s America guy. It's filtered into my innocent eyeballs. It's this wonderful projection of a beautiful, moralistic, entertaining world. So I love the Karate Kid spot, but I don't like Matt Riddle, so. But watch Cobra Kai. It takes the approach of nostalgia of, like, we know why you're watching. We're going to give you a good show, but we kind of know why you're watching too. I've never seen the two things just boom, slapped together so wonderfully. It is so, like, embracing of the nostalgia. The, like, wink to the camera when a callback happens. And it's class. It's Karate Kid's class. Wish real life was like that.
Just, you know what they're going to do now?
Beaches and karate.
WWE are going
to
get
synthesizers. Nice old blokes telling you how to kick ass. Like, God, what a life.
You'll be going to do that thing where, you know, when, like, when they do film reviews and someone's just berated it for you know, two pages. WWE is ... class. Like, that's all they're going to do there. Anything you want to say about Riddle versus Styles, Hamlet?
No.
Okay, there we go. Well, it's a you know, stacked field, but I think we now need to move on to the worst segment on Monday Night Raw this week. This was... And we called it, well, you called it, I should say, more specifically, Michael Sidgwick. Charlotte Flair, she is giving a provider medical update after the single chop block that she received after winning the match last week from Raw Women's Champion Rhea Ripley. She's got a crutch. She's hobbling down to the ring. She cuts a promo saying it must be hard for people to see her like this. She talked about basketball and some players who got injured and ruined the NBA playoffs. Go Bucks! Bucks are in the finals. That's all I know about basketball. And she said, I might miss Money in the Bank, but Rhea Ripley, she's learning. She's picking a few things up from me, basically. Ripley is acting like that because she knows who's the better out of the two of them. Charlotte didn't have to consider that or if somebody was better than her, because nobody is. Rhea Ripley enters. Time stands still as she sells her injury, walking down incredibly slowly, even on double speed, struggling to get down to the ring on her crutch. Oh, can't get up the stairs. And she gets on the mic and she says, I can play your game better than you can. You're just being a drama queen. Oh, and then they kicked the crutch out of each other's crutch at the same time. Of course, they're both absolutely fine. And then there's dueling crutches in a spot. They just sort of kids with lightsabers, basically. And Ripley, I think, hit her in the gut once, and then Charlotte left and they went, yeah, that's about 5 minutes filled. Well done, ladies. Like, this was absolutely nothing, Michael Hamlet. It was awful.
Awful is the word. One of the worst segments of the year from, like, what is definitely, we've said this every week, it's the worst feud of the year. It is. So many awful feuds in 2021, and this is the worst. You said there were, like, kids fighting with lightsabers. the way that they were both grinning as if they'd both somehow got the last word and won the segment at the end was like kids fighting with invisible weapons. Like, oh, I shot you. Oh, I'm wearing a bulletproof vest. Oh, well, I've stabbed you then. Oh, it's stab proof. I've got your kids, Rhea. I've got your kids. Like, somebody has to sell defeat of the moment. And neither of them will. And I feel like I'm watching a shoot. In 1997, Shawn Michaels and Bret Hart hated each other so much that Vince McMahon would often just like put in the Raw format, 10 minutes, and out they go. And like Shawn would make a veiled reference about Bret's private life. Bret would say things that in hindsight sound a little bit in 2021 about Shawn doing Playgirl. They would just get it out of the system and it would be like considered promo work because ultimately it was built into this huge, enormous match between the two biggest stars in the company. But it was like, you know, they had this give and take thing where it's like, all right, Sean's turn this week. He gets like the last word or his music plays or it's switching music out the wheelchair or whatever. Neither of these two will sell anything. So it's just like, they just keep pulling another layer away. Like there's, it's everything to twist. Everything's, I got you. But I got you. And it just goes on and on and on and on. And it feels honestly like it will never end. And I can't take it because it's built into another match. I'm pretty sick of Bayley and Bianca Belair. But honestly, it's starting to feel like Omega Ricardo by comparison. I was like, give me more. I'll take more of that if I have, like, never have to watch any of this ever again. Pitiful. Like, it's beyond saving.
Two arseholes fighting over a fake prop. However, good news. If this ends up as a crutch on a pull match, we've literally formalized the exact comparison to Vince Russo, and we can realize, oh, we don't have to do this anymore. Yeah. Officially, formally, absolutely worthless. Let's just do extra AEW review pods.
2000 Nitro has finally been replaced as the shorthand.
Yeah.
That's it. This was the one.
Oh, this is worse. This is worse.
It is worse.
I'd love that. It's Tuesday, so it's time for the retro AEW Dynamite review 2 years ago or something. Yeah. It's the potential with it all, of course, that we always come back to. Like, it was such an, it was Diana Ross at the 94 World Cup. It was such an open goal. How have you screwed this up? Like, just talk about their history. We all watched it happen. It was WrestleMania. I know it was the NXT title, but we all saw it. But yeah, they've just decided to bin all that off for this. It's, do you know what, I saw this randomly the other day. There was a big MMA fan, big wrestling fan, obviously, big boxing fan as well. And I you know, the press conferences are some of the best bits, obviously, because that sort of combines a few of my favorite things. It reminded me of like, oh, what are they going to say, you know, when they, you know, had all this time, all this animosity between the two of each other. I can't remember who David Hay was facing, but I'm fairly certain at one press conference, he just went, yeah, your mom. And it was like, oh, is that the build for, no, I'm going to knock you out. I'm going to take your head off. No, your mom. Right, nearly at the main event, Sid. We're very nearly there. Before we get there, it's time for the tag match. Not the main event tag match. I'm talking about Jackson Ryker and R-Truth.
Oh, skip.
Skip.
Elias walks away. What are we going to get? A strap match? Great. I'll be silent. What's up?
Just to fill you in on what happened in this 64-second match.
Didn't sound like skipping.
Kira Tozawa ran through. All the 24/7 geeks were there. R-Truth tried rolling him up. The roll-up didn't work for once. Tozawa ran out. Truth followed him. Oh my God, 2-on-1 advantage on Ryker. No, it's not. Elias left. Cedric Alexander lost in 64 seconds to a side slam. Good. Okay, right. Enough of all that. It's now time. This.
It's short, it's crap, it's wrestling related. The 5-star review.
Nailed it! And this week's, sorry, that noise really threw me. This week's 5-star review is brought to you.
There's a noise,
This week's 5-star review is brought to you by Elena Anderson. If you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling related, subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes and leave us a 5-star review, just like Elena, who writes, since I've started listening to the various podcasts from this channel, it has become a regular highlight and something that always helps me enjoy wrestling even more, whether it's getting swept up in your guys' passion for something brilliant, which only makes me love it more, or trying to guess which awful part of Raw you're going to skip for the five-star review review. Speaking of, I was inspired to recommend this five-star review review because having listened to you all, it seems that you all almost love Jon Moxley as much as me, almost. So in saying that, I thought it'd be great to look back at Dean Ambrose dicking about with a Seth Rollins mannequin in 2014. Keep up the great work. Thank you very much for that, Elena. Hamlet, take us back to October 2014 and what was going on with Seth Rollins and one wacky Dean Ambrose.
It's 2014. The Shield has split up and everything's ruined forever, basically. One of the last truly great things WWE did only really happened because there were three people there to constantly fight for it. In a show of autonomy that a single star simply can't do, the Shield would band together very much as their on-screen characters were behind the scenes too, and they would fight for their characters and they would fight for their stories. And ultimately, they got over as a result, shockingly enough. Like, they wanted to protect the integrity of their characters and their gimmick, and what you saw was two wonderful years of the Shield and that people genuinely love. They love to this day. People will just take Seth Rollins versus Roman Reigns at least once just to remember the Shield for 5 minutes. You know, this is not a 3MB thing. This actually mattered. But those days are over. You're living in the now. And the now is Dean Ambrose, the prop comic, of which, of course, he went into fabulous detail on in his podcast with Chris Jericho shortly, just after, of course, he debuted in AEW. And Seth Rollins playing a passable heel, I think. Like, he was bordering on a troll, I think, before he actually won the WWE title. And then he grew into being, like, a decent heel top guy. But this is a bit of it. He's got the Money in the Bank briefcase, so they know they can dick about with him, you know? They can do stupid stuff with him because he's got that case and the company behind him. And they're trying to steer him as far away from the Shield as possible and make people forget. And the feuding, obviously, because of the split. And we've got a match that at least feels like it belongs where it should do, a Hell in a Cell at the pay-per-view. It's the violent conclusion to this devastating severance between brothers. So on paper, Hell in a Cell is the perfect destination. But unfortunately, WWE isn't on paper. It's on USA Network every Monday night, ruining something that you might like to read about on a piece of paper.
Now, watch this clip. We watch the WWE edited version. I'll talk about what they've clipped out when we get to it. But obviously, you know, they have the suggested videos. So I was watching this and it was like, do you want to see Dean Ambrose pour a bucket of cold water over Seth Rollins or that time he made the briefcase, you goo at him? It was a classic time. So yeah, 16 million views this has got. October 2014, Dean Ambrose stood in a ring with a mannequin, a dummy of Seth Rollins. And he says, I'm going to do you a favor this Sunday at Hell in a Cell because I don't want you to think that I don't care about you anymore, okay? The first body part of yours that I rip off inside that cell so you never have to get your hands dirty again will be your hands. And he rips off the mannequin's arm. Sige, tell me exactly what you said to me when I told you about this clip when he said he was going to rip off his arm.
I can't remember, man.
Don't promise things you can't actually deliver.
Yes. The whole thing with Dean Ambrose was they always said, I'm going to, you know, incinerate you live on pay-per-view. Well, save that for 5 years when it all goes completely tits up. We can't do that yet. But yeah, Dean Ambrose was like, just don't make me say things that I can't deliver. I can deliver you this. I'm actually willing to do things that hurt me more than, you know, my opponent to deliver what he later termed as beautiful, glorious wrestling violence. I'm going to, you know, dick a chainsaw to your cock. You're not going to do that. You're not going to do that.
I am cutting Phyllis's head off with a chainsaw. So he's got the mannequin's arm and he says, see, look what you made me do. You think I like getting angry? And he's twatting him across the face with his own arm. He says, do you feel good about yourself? You're sold out to the authority. And then the clip cuts and all of a sudden we've gone past everything. Dean stood in a ring, mannequin body parts are everywhere. There's chairs in the ring. Seth Rollins is on the mic. Either of you remember why that clip just suddenly skipped there?
No.
Well, because the other part of it, he takes a screwdriver out and he talks about screwing him over. And then he says he's going to hammer that point home and uses a hammer on Seth Rollins's mannequin body. And then he says, I'm going to tell you about something I saw in my dream last night. I saw myself chopping your testicles off in the middle of Hell in a Cell. And then I remembered you already sold your testicles to the authority, so I can't do that.
Remember the story beat, guys. Remember the main beat of the story, which I'm going to remind you of a lot. The
exposition came up in my dream.
Let's see how much testicular fortitude you have left. And he goes after his bollocks, basically. He says, nah, you don't need to have kids anyway. And he hit a pile driver on. All this is just cut out, obviously. But anyway, Seth Rollins then comes out. And this is where we catch up on WWE's version of events, at least. Seth says, you finally found an opponent that you can relate to on an intellectual level.
Absolutely no pop whatsoever.
We all know that you're never, ever going to be able to beat me. But on the bright side, at least you can parlay this into a comedy career. You can open up for... Right, it's 2014. Who is a popular comedian in 2014?
Don't say Carrot Top.
Carrot Top! Or Louis C.K. Oh, that's not great looking back, to be perfectly honest. He says, what's next? Are you going to bring out the watermelons? What do you got? Balloon animals in there? What's the deal, huh? 2014. I realise, you know, Gallagher and Carrot Top never really made the leap across the pond, did they?
But Carrot Top, I know exclusively from references on American television.
Mm. Yeah.
I've seen a picture of him. He's like, Jack. weird stuff.
That's how he looked on South Park.
Yeah. Gallagher. So Gallagher's thing was just smashing fruit, basically.
I've got any idea.
He had a fiend-sized mallet, and he'd just bring out a fruit and break it and then go, thanks for coming, everyone. See you later.
Breaking 80 feet of Cedric. Everyone gets a turn.
Hey, some of it was good.
So Ambrose says, I'm not sure, you two are fairly knowledgeable writers, but I'm not sure if you can see the subtext in this. Ambrose says, let's all give a big hand to the world's biggest sellout. Because he had the hand, the mannequin hand is what that was. The
got him,
and he throws the arm at Seth, and Lawler says, "Got to hand it to you."
What he says at the school gate.
Seth says, "I sold out. So what? I sold the Shield out. I sold Dean Ambrose out. So what? Suddenly Ambrose is holding a drill. I don't know what he's gonna do. Think he's gonna do with it." And he says, we got a main event tonight and everything, and I'm saving the worst for Hell in a Cell, but I got no problem giving the people here in, looks at the back of guitar, Kansas City, an early preview, if you're not going to shut your mouth. And then it cuts again, and they brawl, basically. Seth tries to get back in the ring, but he's knocked off the apron by himself? No, by the mannequin. And then Ambrose throws the mannequin at them. JR shouts, La Plancha by the mannequin. And yeah, Rollins and J&J Security sell for the mannequin. And Cole, in the most Michael Cole bit ever, you know, the age old phrase, is it going to be brains or is it going to be brawn? What's going to come out? No, not in WWE. Will it be the brains of Rollins or the, let's just get this crowbar right out, lunatic fringe of Ambrose on Sunday? And that was it.
Like, here's the thing. Whenever people say, oh, that'd be a good feud between these two, because there's a story here, and they seem like they really hate each other, and there's, like, a decent premise for why they would fight, it always ends up like this, man. Idiots. Always ends up like this. You take the classic wrestling story, betrayal, and it ends up like this. Ah, it's not a really good part for the five-star review. You're about to say everything.
They're leaning on the lunatic fringe as well.
Atlanta Falcons.
Just rubbish.
Do you remember the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view? I know, you obviously remember what happened in this match, but do you remember the rest of this card? I was glancing it and I was like, wow, that is a mixed bag right there.
Low-hanging fruit, but like, it wasn't John Cena and Randy Orton, was it?
Yeah, it was. It was.
Never stop fighting. They just can't get along.
They'd literally had a match that, yeah, the Royal Rumble, when everyone was like, just end this now. End! Just end this. They were just completely rejected the entire thing. Then, 9 months later?
Yeah, so to run you through this card, pre-show,
Mark Henry beat Bo Dallas in 32 seconds. Dolph Ziggler beat Cesaro 2-0 in a 2 out of 3 falls match for the IC title. Nikki Bella beat Brie Bella in 6 minutes. Now Brie Bella has to be her personal assistant because baddies always win. Goldust and Stardust versus the Usos. That was probably good. That was followed by a 26-minute Hell in a Cell match between John Cena and Randy Orton to determine the number one contender for the world title. Sheamus beat The Miz with Damian Mizdow out for the United States Championship. We retained the United States Championship. Rusev versus Big Show. Rusev won via submission. AJ Lee versus Paige. AJ Lee retains via submission for the Divas Championship. And main event, Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, Hell in a Cell match, which ends, of course, when Bray Wyatt appears with a spooky specter.
Sheamus versus The Miz in 2014. I've got not one clue how that match was built or how it came about or how it ended or what either person did afterwards.
Ziggler versus Cesaro. I bet that's happened this year. I bet that's happened on SmackDown.
People are still making in custom Photoshop match graphics for WrestleMania 39. Main evented by Dolph Ziggler versus Cesaro.
Double Island Death Match.
Special guest referee Tana Conga.
Come on, WWE.
To be fair, that did lead, I've just looked ahead, that did lead to, of course, Bray Wyatt versus Dean Ambrose at Survivor Series. Any of you remember how that match finished?
He tried to smash him in the face with a plugged in telly.
Yeah, it was a DQ. Hit Bray Wyatt with a chair after 14 minutes.
They were saving the plugged-in telly for the blow-off, were they?
The TLC, yeah.
TLC, God damn it.
Anyway, let's go to the comments section. Because Elise Chris, 4 months ago, writes, oh, those were the days.
Were they?
Every Wednesday night on your television. Every Wednesday, like, go and watch John. The days are happening. You're in them.
You're in the days.
You're in the days. Look at him.
Michael Ruelas writes, this was the best part of the show. Dean Ambrose cracks me up, LMAO. To me, he looks like the type of person who could shoplift and give free stuff away to anyone. Murder Corleone simply writes, I want to see blood again.
We'll watch it on Wednesdays. It's too much of it.
That's not the day.
I don't know why this tickled me. Dodo Iosif simply writes, oh, Dan Ambrose is the best.
Dan Ambrose is his Pro Evolution Soccer name.
Ali Salverson, this is what WWE did to him, writes, I could see Dean wearing a horse hat during this.
How didn't he?
Wacky Dean, it's just Wacky Dean. Sandy Munoz writes, I want you to know the last word in this sentence is capitalized, okay? Dean, get one of those as Triple H. Just get one with a huge nose.
Get one of those with get one of those dummies as Triple H. Just make sure it's got a huge nose.
And Triple H replies, more like huge cock.
I got a huge cock.
Terrified chick next to it and everything.
And
my face, you should see the thing above my balls. And I put it in pussies too.
What was it? Was it Phil who sent us the clip round? I think it might be on Retro Ups and Downs. It might have already gone out, or it might be next week. The clip of them China doing some commentary and speaking Spanish, and Triple H is trying to translate or something, and he goes, oh, "You bilingual, Hunter?" And he goes, oh, I'm allowed to buy things, but I'm not sure about that. And then realizes what he said.
Be that as it may, we are live.
Mm-hmm. And the final comment here, again, This is same as Dan Ambrose. Daniel Haslam writes, why is Dean Ambrose called the lunatic French?
Oh, great.
Oh, God.
So thanks to Elena Anderson for that. That's a great suggestion. Maybe we'll do the spring-loaded goo briefcase next week if you're lucky.
No, we'll do something else, please.
If you want to suggest something short, crap, and wrestling-related for us to review instead of one of many god-awful Raw segments, subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, leave us a 5-star review, and we return to Raw, where, Sid, we're at the main event. We're already... Kofi Kingston, Xavier Woods versus Bobby Lashley and MVP. It got a bit lost in there at some point during this match, but for the most part, it was an entertaining fare, of course. Kingston gets a hot tag at one point, flies in, gives MVP a bulldog, gets a 2 count, super kicks Lashley off the apron, but that allows MVP to fight back, takes down Kingston. He gets a 2 count. MVP tags in, but then Kingston nails Lashley with the Trouble in Paradise. Woods knocks Lashley down outside of the ring, and Kingston blocks MVP's finisher, hits Trouble in Paradise. 1, 2, 3. The New Day beat Bobby Lashley and MVP. What do you reckon, Sidge?
Not much, not much. I don't know if I was just in a bad mood or if this was a just nothing match. Because the thing about Raw is that it's conspired to sort of raise your expectations for a decent in-ring element. I didn't really get any of that tonight, which just renders the whole goddamn thing worthless. And look, the major story beat is Kofi Kingston looks like he might have Lashley's number. I personally would batter Xavier Woods within an inch of his life. But they're taking a different direction. Maybe they'll do that next week. There's just nothing that I could think to say about this. And that's the measure of a truly bad match. Not my inability to do my job. It's the match's fault.
Mm.
Yeah, it was just quite nondescript. I think I like this angle. So I didn't hate this match, but it's for very little to do with the match. You know, they've at least, it's WWE. They change things on the fly all the time for no explanation that's given. They've booked a match where they can deliver a finish. So they get a hair ruffling. Well done. You know, like they've looked at what they had planned, and I guess for whatever reason they didn't want to deliver that. So they've thought, well, let's do this instead because we're trying to service the storyline effectively. And how do you do that? This is some goddamn wins and losses every now and then, of which Kofi Kingston has amassed a few now over Bobby Lashley. Mm. And this is another legitimate clean one in a story I like. Match itself was nothing but there to function for that.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be presented next week, the go-home show. The final Raw without fans, just one more to get through. It's going to present, yeah, does Kofi Kingston have Bobby Lashley's number, as Sidge said, because he's beaten him in singles competition, caveat, you know, Asterix, Drew McIntyre involvement, et cetera, et cetera. And he's got another win over him here. Again, he didn't pin Bobby Lashley, pinned MVP, but the records will show Kofi Kingston gets the W over Bobby Lashley yet again. And I think we speculated this on the preview yesterday, Sidge, but next week you're going to have some sort of contract signing or something where probably it's not going to be a good week to be one Xavier Woods. But nevertheless, we're nearly there, lads. We've got through another episode of Monday Night Raw. So that's the most we can hope for, I think, right about now. But let us know your thoughts on Monday Night Raw on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, they can follow all three of us. You can follow Michael Hamflett at...
Michael Hamflett.
You can follow Michael Sidgwick at...
Sidgwick.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow us all at WhatCultureWWE. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts. Later on today, we'll be previewing the Great American Bash on NXT, of course. And whilst you're there, subscribing to What Culture Wrestling for daily wrestling podcasts, let us know a 5-star review suggesting something short, crap, and wrestling related for us to review instead of something on Raw, just like Elena Anderson. Thanks once again for your review. Right, we've survived it. We've got through it. It's done for another week. It's the highlight of my week. This is the longest time I have to think or talk or look at Monday Night Raw. This has been the Raw Review. My thanks to the Dudley Boys. Thank you for joining us, and we will see you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free
or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.